You are back inside the cave on this Tuesday morning, and as always at 7:25, Tom Crawford joins us from Fox 47 out of Lansing and the Crawford Podcasting Network, and Tom has still got a smile on his face, too, and Tom, it was a good old-fashioned butt-kicking in Columbus on Saturday.
Yeah, it certainly was, Pat. 28-3 in that second half, making some incredible adjustments. Jesse Minter of the D.C. Wow. I mean, I'm still processing this thing in a positive way. And as I mentioned to you before, Pat, I go back to 64 with my involvement with Michigan football as an 8-year-old. And I was in that stadium in 1969, the 24-12, which was, I thought, at that time was the greatest victory. And it still probably is because Michigan was 17-point underdogs, and the Ohio State Buckeyes were compared to the Minnesota Vikings and all that nonsense. But this one on the road as an underdog, 11-0, Ohio State wanting to do the payback stuff that they live every day of their lives, every minute counts, according to Ryan Day, and to Michigan to hammer them in the second half with big chunk plays, that was the sweetest probably of all time when it comes down to it.
Well, Tom, at the beginning of the season, we talked about, well, we really didn't know how good this Michigan team is. And we said, well, we've got a weak preseason schedule. Then we our first test is going to be at Iowa. And then we took care of business there. And then it was going to be Penn State. Well, yeah, we did it there. And then Illinois, we weren't sure about Illinois.
Yeah.
And then, boom, everything just kind of exploded down at the horseshoe. And I mean, I haven't seen a game like this in a long time where against Ohio State, where they just completely were baffled by what Michigan was doing to them.
Yeah, I think J.J. McCarthy said it best in the post game. You know, I mean, they disrespected Michigan's aerial game. They put 7-8 in the box. You know, they would cover zero. Nobody's out there in center field. And we saw what Cornelius Johnson did to them in the first half, and then the huge, huge chunk plays, 75 and 85 yards, respectively, for Donovan Edwards with one hand in a cast. I mean, this is an amazing story. I mean, to flip the script like that in such a hostile environment is crazy. When you got Brian Hartline, the assistant coach, basically challenging the Ohio State fans in a pregame pep rally at St. John Arena next door to be violent, their assistant coach doing that, and once again, all that has hostility, and Michigan just took over that stadium, and it was a hush-hush quiet at the end other than a few thousand Michigan fans. So this one is going to go down in history as one of the greatest in Michigan football history.
Yeah, you know, Tom, the game for me turned when, you know, you talked about cover zero, but Ohio State's corners did not play very well. I mean, even against cover zero, they should have had closer coverage on those throws. I didn't even see the Ohio State player in the frame when the pass first went up. And they just kind of allowed – once Michigan did that, then Ohio State's whole game plan was gone.
Well, you got to give some credit to CJ on that deep route. That's just not. I mean, he put a move on that safety that just broke his ankles a little bit, and he got that open gap there. And this goes back to what I've been talking about. When we got back in this Cade McNamara, JJ McCarthy thing, when Ohio State's throwing up the A gap and they're throwing two and three, you know, zero blitzes right up the middle, which most quarterbacks hate. Pressure up the middle, ask Tom Brady. That would have been, in my opinion, 60 yards easily of net losses in sacks for Michigan. But with J.J., you have such an elusive, talented quarterback who can run out of the pocket. And then the other stuff I talked about earlier last week was his ability to run downhill. He's a tough kid. You saw him on that red zone touchdown, that option keeps your keeper on the RPO, where he ran it in. He threw a shoulder into that safety. Remember that? That's a different level dude as a quarterback, and let alone all the other scrambles. So I know you're picking at Ohio State as being, they suck, so Michigan won because of that. But in reality, and there was some screw-ups. I mean, they did not get safety help over the top on that. But at the same time, I give more credit to Michigan than high critique to Ohio State, John.
Oh, yeah, I agree with that. I'm just saying Ohio State did not play well in the second half and on both sides of the ball, and a lot of that had to do with Michigan, certainly, but and their game plan was gone. I mean, once they couldn't get coverage, once the corners couldn't cover well enough along the sideline, then they had to take a guy out of the box, and then Edwards was ready.
Yeah, and Michigan's offensive line, by most experts, labeled as the best in the country and for the second consecutive year. And you're right about Ohio State. Ohio State lost their composure. And I think, when you reflect back on Joel Klatt mentioned this, there was a nervousness in that stadium from the fan base. And then there was a lack of composure. We saw some ridiculous personal foul calls on Ohio State. The headbutting thing was ridiculous. That dude should have been. I think Ryan Day was mad and took him right out of the game. But, I mean, that's ridiculous. And I give Rod Moore a lot of credit because he didn't, he just kind of just, gave the, throw the flag signal to him and didn't retaliate. And that takes composure. Rod Moore, by the way, was absolutely terrific in this game, along with a ton of other defenders, too many to name for Michigan. But, yeah, the penalties that Ohio State had was unbelievable. I thought they got a pretty good rushing attack. Ohio State got a decent rushing attack, .143, and then C.J. Stroud. I mean, he still he threw 48 times in 349 yards. Not bad, but Michigan made some huge plays in this game. Mike Sanders still on that pass breakup in the end zone that would have cut that game to four as opposed to 8 or whatever it was, on that stop in the south end zone. That was huge. And then Michigan got the big play, the first touchdown right after that from Donovan Edwards, and that flipped the game. There's so many critical plays in this game that turned it around. But I think Michigan having that first touchdown pass to CJ was unbelievable turnaround. And when I thought Ohio State started thinking, it very reminded me of the 96 touchdown pass to Ty Streets, where all of a sudden the momentum shifted on one play.
Well, you talked about that. That was the play that made the game, in my opinion, because Michigan hadn't done it all season. They had not gone over the top like that to get points.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden.
Game, we talked about that. We talked about lack of. And, quite honestly, they held a lot of stuff back. How about Khalil Mullings on that little pop pass as a linebacker converted running back? I mean, this is where, he's 1 for 1 for 15 yards. And Scooney caught his only pass of the game in a game where there was a lot of kids who were playing hurt for Michigan, which even labels this game even more heroic, and Harbaugh mentioned that locker room full of heroes, and Mullins is one of those, and Scooney and a lot of other guys are as well, and so that was huge. That was a big third down, and they set that play up. How'd they set it up? On the earlier series, they went up the middle and got nothing, and so that lays the groundwork for doing something different, and they did something different, and it was a huge play.
Well, and I just want to say, Michigan's offense, hugely more efficient than Ohio State's. They were turning the yards into points, and the Michigan defense was not allowing Ohio State to do the same.
In the red zone, you're right. Exactly right, Johnny. Ohio State moved the football, I thought, quite a bit between the 20s, but you did have this sense of confidence that once they got in the red zone, Michigan's defense was going to shore up, and it did on a couple of those occasions in the second half. And all of a sudden, this game was over. But all of us were pretty much projecting a Michigan loss, other than Charles Woodson and Desmond Howard and their national TV roles. But to envision a 22-point win in Columbus when everybody was picking Ohio State, and Ohio State had pinpointed this game for 365 days, and it's unbelievable. It's an unbelievable thing that I did not envision at all.
Tom, you texted me prior to the ball game saying that everyone who matters in this game will be dressing, which they did. And, of course, Blake Corum got a couple of carries, but it was very obvious that he wasn't going to be able to go the rest of the game. Schoonmaker was in, but wasn't really effective, I don't think.
Yeah, I mean, he was, but Michigan with Colson Loveland, number 18, who a lot of people might not realize. I mean, he's played quite a bit of football this year as a true freshman. And I remember him in camp, everybody was talking about Loveland, about how this freshman is really good. And so he stepped up. That's the next man up mentality. And so I'm not sure if Schoonie will be back for the Big Ten championship game. And it was nice to see that Eric All announced yesterday he's coming back for another year. That just shows you the complete buy-in to this program and how the culture has completely switched from a couple years ago. So, I think Michigan can win this game with the injuries. And I don't think Blake's going to play in this game. I would be absolutely shocked. He can't really cut. But I do think whatever measures they do, when it's still a little bit uncertain what they're going to do in terms of remedying his situation with his knee, that he'll play in the playoff game.
All right. Well, let's talk a little bit about their opponent this Saturday, the Purdue Spoiler Makers. And are you a little bit nervous about this one, too?
Hey, Pat, you were sitting next to me in the Hawaii game. I was nervous wasn't I a little bit? No, I mean, Purdue is, their reputation. I can go chapter and verse on games. I remember that 76 game, Michigan was number one or number two in the country down in Ross, and they beat them. I'm going way, way back. But, I mean, they've had a history of being kind of a weird team that can lose to anybody but can win against anybody, and they've beaten three top five teams in their recent history. O'Connell's a good quarterback. They can throw the ball, and they got a walk-on running back who's now emerged, so they got a little diversity in their offense. And they'll have a pretty good fan base, I'm thinking. West Lafayette, not far away from Indy, but I think Michigan will still outnumber the fans. I think Michigan's defense is gonna decide this game, let alone the offense. I really think J.J. McCarthy, on a dry, optimum track, if you will, is going to be big. And I'm going to make a little prediction. I just got a gut reaction or feel that Andrew Anthony is finally going to come up and catch a couple passes in this game. Because if you add that along with C.J. and the others in that receiving core, Ronnie Bell, that will help Michigan's passing attack a great deal if you can get some of these kids who we've been waiting for to step up and the receiver core to step up.
Yeah, I think Anthony is way overdue.
Yeah, he is.
Now,
but he's got the capability of doing it.
I mean, really? I mean, come on. How is this game going to be any different than the one last year? I mean, really?
Well, it's because of college football. I mean, we see it. I mean, first of all, there's a couple concerns, I say this, and I'm not worried about it. I mean, this team is so incredibly focused, but, when you come off a huge high in a Michigan-Ohio State game, you're playing the very next week. I mean, Ohio State's done it. They struggled with Northwestern a couple of years ago. If you remember, after they beat down on Michigan, they struggled in the first half against Northwestern in the Big Ten championship game. But I think this, percentage-wise, that the chance of Purdue winning, I think it's like 10%. So that's, that's been cited in Vegas, so maybe that's about it. But you never know. And you fear about turnovers and things of that nature. So, you're right. I feel, I'll just say, John, I feel very confident about this.
I just want to say, there are people out there talking that this is going to be the most boring conference championship game of the five. And they might be right. Like I said, it could be just like last year. But before we're running out of time, Tom, I want to ask you one thing. 2 years down the road, maybe a little bit more, they just played this game at Ohio State, and in the future, they're going to play them again next week in Indy. How is that going to work out?
When you mean, you're talking about the division?
Yeah, when they get rid of the divisions, You know, and then they're going to have to play again in the conference championship game next week.
You know, that's
I mean, if that was the way it was, that's what we'd be looking at this year.
Yeah, we would, and that would be unprecedented in college football. I'm trying to think because when Alabama and Georgia, they were other divisions. I don't know if you push Ohio State in the middle of the season, but then that strips away that huge tradition of being the last game. I don't know. That's a great question, but it'll be thought of deeply. Trust me on that one. But I'm just savoring what's going on right now. I mean, this is potentially a special season for Michigan. It's lining up just right, especially if everything holds serve with TCU and USC in there. And I like the numbers 3 and 4 in that scene if it holds serve in Georgia, Michigan. TCU and USC, Michigan. I think they can knock off either of those, however they're slotted. Talking about TCU and USC, and then have a much more competitive chance out at SoFi in Los Angeles for a national championship for Michigan against Georgia. I think that's how it's going to play out. And this could be magical. So 2 years from now, like, who cares, right? If this happens.
Well, two big wins for Michigan against Ohio State. Is Ryan Day turning into a John Cooper?
No, it could be. It depends on next year. And you know, with a transfer portal, you don't know what every year is going to be weird to try to analyze forwarding what's going to be. But, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of pressure, but that's the psychotic level Ohio State fan base and the expectations of winning. So, you know, if you're Ryan Day, it's like he's got to grab this one next year in Ann Arbor, or he is a world of hurt.
Tom, we are out of time here on Inside the Cave, but certainly we thank you for joining us here every Tuesday morning at 7:25 on 96.5 The Cave and 965thecave.com. And, of course, Tom, tell us about the Crawford Podcasting Network.
Yeah, you can find me on Tom's Take Community on the Facebook page. We feed a lot of content. Also, Blue Belly Tom on Twitter and Wolverine.com podcast with John Borton today at 5:30, going live for 45 minutes. So we'll have a lot of fun. 15 minutes with you guys seems like 15 seconds. It goes way too fast.
Way too fast. We may have to extend this someday here. Hey,
with
Tom.
With a natty, yeah, we'll do it.
Yeah, Tom, we'll see you Saturday at Lucas Oil Stadium.
All right, Pat and John, thanks for having me on.
All right, you bet. Tom Crawford from the Crawford Podcasting Network and Fox 47 out of Lansing. We'll be back with more on Inside the Cave after these messages.